Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Yes, everybody, what's going on? Welcome to another episode of The Warm Down today. Delighted to be joined by Simon Peach from the Press Association. Thanks for joining me, mate. How are you doing?
All right, yeah. Pretty tired after the Super Cup. It's quite a crazy city, Istanbul, and it was a long night.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a midweek, John. When did you get back?
Got back late Thursday. So it's all recovery is well underway. It's nice.
Straight into Ollie's presser Friday.
Straight into Ollie's presser. Always nice and early. At least it's out of the way.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that. I wonder how they're going to do the press conference on Friday with us having Wolves on Monday, or does he maybe? I thought, yeah, he probably won the weekend anyway, won't he? So obviously it was Friday still.
Thankfully, I remember when I used to work in London. West Ham used to do it when Sam Allardyce was in charge on a Saturday morning at about 8 a.m. and they'd only send Neil McDonald, the assistant. So at least we got to speak to the manager. And it was a Friday.
How was Ollie in the presser?
I felt he was in a better mood than he was last week. I think last week he looked like he, I was going to say the weight of the world, that's an over-exaggeration. He had a lot on his plate because obviously he was expecting lots of difficult questions, but you couldn't have dreamt of a better start to the season.
You couldn't have dreamt for a better start to the season. I think that's got to go down all right. So you think maybe that's took a bit of the nerves out of him maybe?
Well, it's just... Now we're not asking about who he's signing, why aren't you signing them, what do you think of this, that and this. It's just, that went well. I mean, we still found things that need to work on. We spoke a lot about Alexis Sanchez today, for example. But, hey, at least you're doing that from the base of a 4-0 win against Chelsea.
So he did speak about Alexis Sanchez, and he said he's going to feature a lot more than a lot of you think. What's your take on that?
He said similar when we spoke to him in Perth, when we had the sit-down with him in Perth. But to hear him repeat it now is probably more noteworthy because... Obviously, the UK window's shut. I'm not sure how many people in the UK would be able to afford him or want him, but the European window's open. So, look, he's not going to say, I don't want him. But at the same time, it's good that he obviously has the belief of the manager because he is a talented player. It's really strange how it's gone so far after all that fanfare. So, look, he's on big wages. Time to earn it, boy.
Yeah, I think Sanchez has got the potential to probably surprise someone, and I think we all hope that he can because you look at that forward line and you go, OK, Tony Marshall's probably going to... Stays number nine. Marcus is his backup slash playing off that left inside forward role. And then you're looking at a 17-year-old.
Talented.
Extremely talented. Possibly a generational guy coming through, but he's still got 4 years before he's the same age as Marcus. He's still got a lot of developing to do. That, as your third choice, essentially backup striker, is a lot of a weight of expectation. If Sanchez can come in and even just... come to the same level as Tony and Marcus are, we might have a bit of an issue, or the opposition might have a bit of an issue. That might be enough for United to be relatively successful, I think, this year.
Yeah, look, clearly I think having another elite option to play through the middle would be ideal. And I personally prefer Rashford leading the line and Martial out wide because I don't think he played particularly well despite scoring against Chelsea. And I think Marcus is more reliable in that position. Mason, as you say, he's a great talent. He's cleared through the ranks. I was chatting to someone this morning about him and how they perhaps felt he could have been brought in even sooner. But look, he's...
I know,
but they were thinking that maybe around the turn of the year would have been time to start bringing him in. Obviously, that was a difficult time for Manchester United, a transitional phase, a phrase that you're well used to after the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, we're kind of sick of it.
But yeah, Alexis is very talented. I mean, I know he was becoming a bit of an afterthought, which is mad to think. But
I think the lack of him on pre-season has really accelerated that sort of he doesn't exist kind of vibe, which definitely exists.
Yeah, and it's the same with Fred, I think, as well, because what is he? He was the fourth most expensive signing in Man United history.
Oh man, I don't think about it like that.
Yeah, so he's around and everyone's saying the midfield options aren't great. The club know that, they're not blind, but at the same time, you can't just write off Fred after one season. He's a Brazil international. He's a Brazil international for a reason.
I actually think he's a good player as well. I think by the sounds of things, there's talk coming out that they might not have, or Ollie may not have been so happy with the timing of when he booked his wedding. Do you think there's much in that?
I don't know. If you're a Brazil international, I guess he was at the World Cup. Why wouldn't you be in the squad at the end of the season for the Copa America? So book your holiday after it. That kind of makes sense. But yeah, I wouldn't be too happy if I didn't have a player that needs to kick on. But he's not spoken openly about it in a negative way. And I asked about Fred this morning at the press conference because I'm interested to see how he does. And I remember that Jose Mourinho, I know he's not a particularly popular figure with everyone, but he said last December that once we have a good defence, you'll see the best of Fred. Mm. Well, you've got a good defence now, certainly on paper, and for most of the game against Chelsea, so surely it's time to shine.
Fred's issues was seemingly those clangers he was dropping when taking it from the defence, taking it from the goalkeeper. With a ball-playing defender partnership that we've got in someone like Maguire and Lindelof, the need for him to do that should be reduced, if not eliminated. So maybe he's able to start receiving the ball 20 yards further up the pitch because of that. Maybe that was what Jose was talking about. Maybe he's absolutely bang on for that.
Yeah, and let's hope he is, because it's not nice to see players crumble, and that does happen at Manchester United because it's the biggest, if not the biggest club in the world. So that pressure is going to affect people in different ways. So let's hope Man United start to see the best of him.
Let's talk about yourself for a little sec, because we just had a quick little chat about it. The Press Association is who you work for. It's not traditionally like writing directly for one of the broadsheets or one of the tabloids where you turn up every day. If it's a broadsheet, you maybe do some good work. If it's a tabloid, you just talk lots of bollocks. But it's not like where you turn up every day and just create stories for that newspaper. Your news goes out across to everybody. The Press Association is a news service, isn't it?
Yeah, so we produce a thing called The Wire. We have for 125 years, 150 years. I should have remembered, I was at the anniversary thing. But yeah, we're a news service, so everyone subscribes to us. We don't get any money for... If I write 10 stories about a day about Man United or one, our customers expect a level of service, which is it's accurate and it's as quick as I can get it done once stood up. And yeah, so everyone from tabloids, they're not all bad, I should say, to the broadsheet, to Sky, BBC, everyone subscribes to us. As I was saying to you earlier, I'm not aware of anyone that is a news organisation in the UK that don't subscribe to us, whether that's a national level or a regional level.
Yeah, I think the Press Association also provides things like, or did used to provide things like data and things like that.
Yeah, we still do that. I'm not an expert on that. For anyone that followed me over the tour, they could see video. I have to film now and again. Don't do it too often, but yeah, we provide video. Our pictures, we sent 3 photographers to the Super Cup the other night, so we're a multimedia agency. I can't keep up with what we do, but we do a lot.
Where's the best place for the average listener or watcher of this podcast to come and find your work?
Honestly, it changes day by day. So I just tend to post stuff when I have time on my Twitter feed.
All right, so yeah, we'll throw Simon's Twitter in the link in the description. Just give you a follow and go and find some of the stuff on there. You spoke to Paul Scholes recently.
Yeah, played him.
Played him?
Yeah, we had a five-a-side with him after.
Oh, was that the one on the top of Hotel Football?
Yeah.
Ah, right. How amazing did he still look?
He didn't get out of second gear, but he still looked pretty good. Yeah.
So, what did Paul have to say when you spoke to him?
Well, he's always an interesting character. He's very just chilled and he makes some funny remarks. But no, I think when I asked about the Man United midfield, they're going to be okay. United are going to be okay. And I agree with him. I don't think they're going to blow anyone away with their midfield play this season. I don't think it's going to be as dreadful as some were perhaps fearing. And I think that's probably a fair assessment. And but it's hard not to go one way and think it's really negative when they clearly were looking at midfield and one didn't arrive.
Yeah, I think we definitely need a midfielder. Identifying exactly what that looks like and who that looks like, I'm personally struggling with, because I think Ollie could play a 3, I think he could play a 2, and I think he'd be happy playing either of those formations. The exact character that lines up in that, I'm not sure on. Mm. Bruno Fernandes was a name that we was linked heavily with over the summer. It was my understanding, shall we say, that United weren't in for him as much as was being made out, and that it was more the Portuguese press that was pushing this. Mm. What was your take on that?
Well, I'm really happy that saga is over, at least for a couple of months anyway. No, it's it was a funny one because I heard mid-June that United liked him. But I didn't lead a story on it. I just put it within a story about his house. As these things happen, it kind of grows legs on its own. But I didn't write anything about it again because, like you, I'd heard that the interest wasn't as strong as has been made. Look, some people were saying the deal's close, the deal's done. And I understand why fans would get on the back of that. I personally, after that, kept my beak out of it because adding the noise isn't going to help anyone. Mm. But it's a real strange one. It's the strangest transfer that I've... non-transfer that I've ever... been involved in. I know Man United fans, I've got to admit, at this stage, wasn't focusing so much on Man United, but Nico Gaitán keeps being brought up.
Schneider,
yeah. So it does happen, and it's I guess, in the social media era, or while social media growing year on year, it's these kind of stories are going to gain more and more traction. And I kind of feel sorry for the fans that did believe it. And I think Bruno Fernandes is a great player. I know people that know him talk about what a great person he is. I've seen him in the flesh. He's a brilliant player, but it didn't happen for whatever reason. And in the end, it doesn't even sound like they had that strong an interest.
Yeah, the two that I'd heard about, I didn't hear a damn thing about Dan James. That caught me totally cold. I'd heard about Wan-Bissaka back in March, and then I'd heard about Maguire in June. If you do the maths, it was around the time he was away on Nations League duty. Figure that one out. And that was the only ones I'd heard anything of. I just kept repeating all summer until I actually heard something, and what I'd heard was what I just said, like the interest isn't as strong as it's being made out. But I'd heard nothing. I'd heard nothing on De Ligt. I'd heard nothing on Bruno Fernandes. I'd heard nothing about Pepe or anybody else that we got linked to. It was literally just... The one I did hear something on, well, there was a couple actually that... But they ended straight away. One was Sancho was up for it, the club wouldn't pay the fee. And one was keep an eye on what happens with Toni Kroos. And then he signed a new contract. So I guess that was the end of that one.
Look, a club like Manchester United has... I know people might think there is not much transfer planning behind the scenes, but they plan relentlessly. I think the first meetings about transfers around December time, then they whittle that shortlist down in the areas that they've decided in about March, and then they move into the market. I'm not saying what they've done is perfect, but I think it's certainly improved the defence. And I think Dan James is a free hit, really. He's a talent at a value that... Look, he started brilliantly. He's still going to need time, I think. But at that price, it's hard to... If it goes wrong, it goes wrong. At the end of the day, it's not that much money.
No,
you only get three quarters of a Tyrone Mings for that, I think.
I'm pretty happy with the business that we did do. Mm. I think, like most United fans, we'd probably say we just didn't do enough.
Yeah, and look, the people at the club aren't blind. I think they're aware that a central midfielder is required at some point. How urgent that is, maybe they don't think it's as urgent. And a right winger, which for me, look, I've covered this club since Marcus Rashford's debut. It's quite easy to remember when I started covering them because Marcus started so well against Midtjylland.
Was that literally your first game?
Yeah, it was my first game.
Oh, brilliant.
First press conference was Louis van Gaal saying... to Juan Mata, I tell everyone to be horny, don't I? And I'm like, what have I walked into here? And ever since that point, I've gone, right, so every transfer window, you're not getting a right winger. What? Right, I must be like just not up to speed with it. But it just seems mad, the balance of the team. Every time there's a transfer window, you seem to sign someone that can play on the left, a forward that can play on the left. Sign someone that can play on the right, for goodness sake.
Yeah, even against Chelsea, we started fantastically well. When you looked at the average positions after the game, you know, Pereira, I think, was lined up to be the right side forward there, and he got a fantastic crossing. But his average touch still ended up being quite central. Wan-Bissaka was still looking at nothing in front of him, which we've seen for years now. I think Pogba doesn't help this because I think he likes to go all to the left hand side every time he gets the opportunity. But yeah, the frustration of just why is there no one and there's nobody in the academy that you think, bar Mason, that could come, and I don't think Mason's quite ready to start yet.
I wasn't blown away with him when he played on the right on the tour. I did think this, and this is just based purely on how it could work. Wan-Bissaka was a winger back in his day, and Delo's played as a winger. Could you play the both of them sometimes? Because then you've got two players with attacking instincts and two players with defensive instincts, and they could dovetail. I don't know if that would work. Maybe they would just negate each other and it would be an absolute mess, but it could work.
Yeah, in theory, I think it could work. I think we're going away from being a team that likes to cross in the manner that Dalot crosses. Obviously, Pereira managed to put one of those particular crosses in this weekend and we scored from it, so maybe I'm talking bollocks. But I do think we're going from being a team that tries to play a bit more intricately in the final third rather than a team that slings crosses in, for example.
Yeah. I still think it's a work in progress, but at least now you guys have a joined-up plan when it comes to attacking. I know it sounds stupid, but so many clubs you go and see and there's a defined style. You can watch them once or twice, you can see it. That's how they play. With Manchester United, I have not really known how they've played for a while, but the way you press at the right times, it's not perfect yet, it's far from it, but pressing at the right times, leaving at the right times, pressing the right players, pressing in the right areas, that can only be a positive.
Yeah, I think there's an identity that started to appear, and I'd say only started to appear, and I don't think you can go, that's a clearly defined Manchester United way of playing just yet, but there's, like you said, the press is starting to emerge into something. I was the happiest with Mason's goal on the tour. The ball from Pogba, the cross from, or the pass even from Wan-Bissaka, and Mason one-touched it into the net. If United can have an easy tapping like that for the likes of Tony Marshall and Marcus Rashford, I'll be absolutely delighted. Because I think that's why City have been so successful, is they create easy chances that they go, finish that too. Whereas if I said to you, name me a Manchester United goal in the last 4 or 5 years, you're going to struggle. You'd probably be like...
Marouane Fellaini heading it.
Yeah, or someone's bent one in, or it's a last-minute scramble, or like... There isn't... But if I said define a Manchester City goal or a Liverpool goal, you can do it.
Sweep it in, cross in.
One, we're not scoring enough of them. Two, we don't have that pattern of play.
There's still work. I remember I watched Match of the Day 2 after the game, and obviously the Man United game was great. It was a great performance on the whole. There were still areas to improve on. And then the Man City highlights came on, and the way they were scoring was just such a different way. There's still a lot to do, but if you're winning 4-0 against Chelsea, I guess we shouldn't be too picky.
No, I don't think we can be picky after winning 4-0 in the slightest. We had 5 shots on target and scored 4 goals. You could say we maybe want to have a few more shots on target, but ultimately if you can score 4 goals and be criticising the way we've been as well. I mean, what's your take on that?
The cloud, that was such a relief for everyone at the club for that cloud to be lifted. And it always kind of felt like it would be once there was a positive result, but there was no guarantees that there was even going to be a draw in that game after the way the United finished the season. So it's just, it was, from my perspective, from a purely selfish perspective, it's always nicer to write about good things than bad in terms of performances and the atmosphere. So it was a huge relief for me after a crazy transfer window.
Well, you're not unique. Well, it's not a universal standpoint that you see. A lot of people that prefer to talk about the negative side of things and the drama side of things rather than either the actual football or the things that are going right. I think Ollie brings with him a general sense of things will be all right.
No, and you're right. And I do like drama. I do like gossip. I like all of that, like everyone does. But sometimes there needs to be just a... You guys needed a week of just... Well, so did I as a journalist. Just, right, good start, let's build on it. Wolves is a massive game. We've seen how badly that's gone. Ollie absolutely rinsed his players after the FA Cup game. Didn't get much better in the league game. You guys need a positive performance there.
How much of I know they rested heavily for the Europa game. How much of an impact do you think the Europa game's going to have on that?
Quite a lot. I mean, look, I'm a Southampton fan, and when we were in Europe, we struggled to deal with it, and we'd obviously got a small squad, and we weren't used to being in European competition. Same with Burnley last season. It does impact those clubs. It impacts every club, but those clubs that haven't experienced it in a long time, it does have a bigger impact because a lot of the players aren't used to it, or they're used to it, and then they're not used to the English game fully. So it's a real mix, and this is a good time to be playing at Wolves, I think.
What would a win represent, in your opinion, if we managed to convincingly put Wolves away on Monday?
Well, again, I don't think people should get too carried away because it would...
Come on, Simon.
I'm sorry.
I'm booking parades and shit here.
Well, can we make sure it's a nice sunny day? Because it just isn't, is it?
There's no guarantee of that.
There's no guarantee. No, look, I my feeling is that in this generation, everyone's so knee-jerk. One loss, it's the end of the world. One win, we're going to win the title, get the parade booked. So it'll be the second game of the season.
I've already booked it, don't worry about that.
You've already booked it, good. I think it'll be a really important marker. Mm. I think it'll be an important marker, and I think it will tell the players we're going the right way. And I'll be really interested to see who's left out of the squad this time.
Well, I was going to talk about that. One is changes. I personally wouldn't make any changes to the Chelsea team, but there was something that I found very intriguing with the bench against Chelsea, and that was Axel Tuanzebe was the third choice centre half, the first one on the bench, and he warmed up a few times. It was pretty good not to see him come on, actually. Do you think he may have elevated himself above the other centre halves in the club, and does that mean that we might see some of them leave before the end of the window?
I think if you look at it, they've got too many. Like, even with Bailly injured, what is it, six? Mm. With Bailly injured?
It's too many till there's a couple of injuries, though, isn't it? With a very injury-prone defence.
No, true. Maybe Phil Jones was injured last weekend. We never know with Phil. No, but in all seriousness, someone will have to leave, in my opinion, just for the happiness sake. Look, the Europa League is going to give people opportunities, and I think Axe will play a lot compared to what he's played before, and be heavily involved in Europa League and stuff like that, and gradually be phased in. But I think Lindelof and Maguire are now the two to dislodge, and I think it's going to take some dislodging. Ollie, as we've discussed earlier, wants to play out from the back, and I think Chris Smalling is a criminally underrated defender, but he's not a ball-playing centre-back.
No, that's to put it very, very politely.
And Phil Jones, I think, can do that. Can you rely on him? He's been at the club for a long time now and he's had plenty of opportunities. I still think he's a good defender and I think he's a good squad player. If I was to go into Rojo would be the one I'd let go at the moment. Not necessarily because I think he's a really bad player. He just hadn't had the game time. And I think it'd be pretty more beneficial for him to go elsewhere and get game time than to be fifth choice, sixth choice, whatever. And more beneficial for Manchester United to have Axel Tuanzebe progressing.
Do you think there's an element of the amount of players that we've got that are probably not first choice, but are on very, very high wages? The likes of Young, Smalling, Jones, Rojo. You could even throw Sanchez into the mix with this one. Possibly even Wan-Mata if he doesn't start too often. Mm. Do you think this is one of the possible reasons why we didn't see us bring in another first choice player?
This is quite possibly. I mean, I haven't really thought about it that way. I just think that's what's hamstrung Man United in terms of moving players on. And it's the same with every Premier League club in terms of if you've got players and big contracts, they might be attracting interest from a mid-table side in Spain or even an upper-level side that isn't one of the big two. But they can't afford to match what a mid-level Premier League club are playing. So a club like Manchester United, who are paying Rojo 100-plus a week, How is anyone going to match that? How is anyone going to be able to afford that? It's a very select group that can afford that. And, 19 of those clubs are now out of the question because the English window shut. So where does he go? And the Chinese window shut. So someone like that who's got a long time his contract has to balance up money and ambition. And I think he will want to play. He seems like a really impressive character, to be honest. He can't make toast, but he looks like an impressive guy. So I hope for him, for his sake, he moves, because I just don't see the game time for someone like him this season. And I mean, Matteo Darmian.
I forgot about Hardman.
Yeah, I know.
Italian international.
I know. And I remember covering the opening game of the 2014 World Cup, Italy against England in Manaus. And I was really impressed by Darmian. And he signed. I was like, well, that's a really good signing. I'm really looking forward to seeing how it goes. And he's just regressed. And I'm not sure why. But it was clear last summer that it would be best for all involved if he gets a good move, and I hope he gets one now, because look, Aaron Wan-Bissaka's come in, you've got other options, and it's just not going to happen.
I am amazed he's still here. I wonder if sometimes he doesn't even bother going into training, because I reckon he'd probably think no one will even know.
No. Yeah, he's again, whenever I've ever spoken to him, he's a really nice guy, but...
Well, you've never heard a bad story about him.
No, he seems like the ultimate professional in terms of the way he lives his life. He's got a massive dog, that's all I can seem to glean from his social media. He's a new dad. And I just hope for him he gets regular football, because he ain't going to get at United. He's been a good servant in terms of Man United need players, like every big club, you need players that will keep their head down and get on with things. They're not going to play very often, but when they do come in, they do a solid job. He was one of those players. The clubs have been built on players like that, but he's probably lived a year and a half beyond his...
If not more.
I'm trying to be nice, in case he now becomes a starter and becomes player of the year.
Well, I think even if he does, I think everyone will just be able to go, well, I didn't see that coming. I think that'd be fair enough. But you know, he was integral in the Ajax win in the Europa League. He had a fantastic game in the final, a like, very important tactical piece of the puzzle. It's just, it's a strange cat. I just think, maybe it's because he keeps his head down. You know, I don't think the likes of Rojo are keeping their head down. I know he was trying to get away in January. Obviously, that didn't materialise. I imagine he's trying very hard to get away now. I don't think he's the one that's going to sit there and be like, yeah, I'll be fifth choice and never play.
Well, he's an Argentina international and he's lost a lot of time to injury. Why would you want to sit there?
Yeah, you wouldn't, would you?
So it'd be more disappointing if he wasn't looking for first team football.
You guys are playing Liverpool early doors on Saturday.
Yeah, I hope we smash them.
Do you think that's likely?
We lost 3-0 at Burnley last weekend, so it's hard to be too confident. Seeing Klopp, when I was in the mix zone, which is, I'm sure people watching have heard of, it's a mysterious area where players ignore journalists. Adrian stopped, as you would do after the game of his life, and I was stood next to Jurgen Klopp, who'd stormed off the bus into the mix zone and shouted at him, "We got a game on Saturday. Finish now," basically. It was about 4 a.m, 3 a.m.
He didn't come and give hugs out?
No. He'd stopped putting on the smiley, happy face by that point. So they wouldn't have got back...
No cameras?
they didn't get back to... They can't have got back to extremely late or in the middle of the day. I know that they're having a press conference today at Melwood, and then they've got to travel to Southampton. It's not easy, even with a squad like that. So, yeah, I hope we smash them.
I hope you smash them. I'm not very confident, though. No, I certainly won't be putting an acker on it. Where do you see them going forward this season? Do you see them going forward this season? Are they still going to be City's main challenger? Are they going to push them as close as last year?
Well, you'd think so. There's not been any sign that they're not going to so far. I was surprised they didn't strengthen in the summer, unless you consider Andy Lonergan strengthening. But
do you not think there's an element of what we saw with Spurs the previous summer where there's maybe not an obvious place to strengthen?
Yeah, but then... Or not an obvious option to strengthen with, maybe. Perhaps. And it's not like they're going from a bad place, is it?
They didn't, not really, no, sadly.
They've got a really good squad that have a good understanding. Now, I think in the next year or so, you'll probably see some parts that were important for Klopp in years gone by, or maybe the last year, start to change with newer people. So that'll be interesting to see how they balance that transition, that word you love. But yeah, Man City and them, they're just the best teams, I'm afraid to say.
Yeah, and then you've got, whether you agree with it or not, I don't really, but Spurs are allegedly the second best team in Europe, so... By position, at least, whether or not by opinion.
Look, Spurs have done... Look, I covered Spurs when Mauricio arrived, and I covered Southampton throughout his time. I covered Mauricio for his first 3 years in England, so I've got to understand him and his methods quite well and appreciate them. And he's brilliant. He's an iron fist in a velvet glove, as people say. He will put an arm around the shoulder and make a player for like $1 million till that player does him wrong, and then he'll not play again. So he's a really impressive manager. I think he'd do fantastically at Manchester United one day. Hopefully it's not going to be not for a long time if Ollie's doing superbly. But I can't see many better managers in the Premier League than him.
They bought well as well, which...
Eventually.
Yeah, eventually. Which means I think that those three, unless there's something catastrophic happens, and who knows, the goalkeeping situation at Liverpool might be a door open.
The squad depth at Tottenham as well, isn't there's still areas where they are pretty bare. So I don't think they're beyond gettable, but that's going to take some consistent football from the likes of Manchester United to usurp them.
Out of United, Arsenal and Chelsea, who is clearly 3-1, is not going to go. Mm. Who's the one do you think that's the best equipped to get into that fourth spot?
Well, obviously I want United to. As I said, I like an easy life. I like an easy life. I think Arsenal's been really impressive with the way they've operated in the transfer window. I think they've shown what Edu's... I'm giving him the credit. He might not deserve it all. The work they've done, Luis, for 8 million...
I'm not convinced on Luis' an answer to defence.
I'm convinced of him more than Mustafi.
Okay.
I think Arsenal have done good work in the market. How quickly they adapt and work as a unit, I don't know. Chelsea, they looked really good the other night in the Super Cup. They deserve to win that. I thought Pulisic did really well when he came on. Mount looks class. Whether how many more chances Tammy Abraham gets to start, I don't know. But Frank Lampard seems to have everyone singing off the same hymn sheet for now. When the chips are down, let's see how that goes. I think it's hard to split them, really, the three. I could see all of them finishing in the top four. I could see all of them finishing third. I just don't see anyone finishing outside, other than City and Liverpool in the top two.
Yeah, I think even if Spurs didn't quite live up to the expectation is that they're the third best team in the country. Mm. I think even if they didn't live up to that, I don't see them being fifth. I think fourth is about as bad as it should get for Tottenham unless something mental happens.
Yeah, but... I guess even when stuff bad like that, like last season with the stadium, I think it happened, they rode that out amazingly well. And they did ride their luck, don't get me wrong, by getting to the final and the way they did it. I think in the group stage, over 10 minutes from going out three times or something, there was some ridiculous statistic like that. So... They're a great side. That's the problem Man United have now. It's not just the shortcomings that they have. It's just the way that everyone else now is at another level. And it wasn't like the days where you could say, hi, Tottenham, we'll have Michael Carrick. Cheers, give us Dimitar. You can't even do that to a Sheffield United very easily anymore.
Well, I'm looking at that Wolves midfield that we're likely to face against on Monday. And I'm looking at Dendonka and Moutinho and Neves. And I'm going, they all start for United. All three of them probably better than our midfield combined. So...
I think Paul Pogba might have something to say about that. But look, that's what I mean. Everyone's. Whereas United used to dominate that pool of. There's obviously like top 20 players in the world. And then the pool underneath that, a club like Man United would just pluck anyone that they want. Now, a lot lesser clubs would be able to go in. When Stoke got Shaqiri, that was an alarm bell. If Stoke can buy Shaqiri.
From Inter Milan.
Yeah, from Inter Milan. Then things are changing.
It's not a well-beaten path, though.
No, and Wolves, freshly promoted, Moutinho, look, I know he's ageing, but he's good. Getting Neves in the Championship, he was captain of Porto in the Champions League at the age of, 19. Clubs now have more strength than ever. And I think players now see pathways more than ever, that they might not see Wolves as the end game, but if they go to Wolves, and they can play and establish themselves. And then when the Man United come in, they can go there. Look at Harry Maguire. I don't know how much of a pathway he had in his head, but I suspect when he joined Leicester... That wasn't him going, I'm going to be here for the rest of my career. And I followed him relatively closely because my partner's a whole season ticket holder, so I've seen him a lot. I've seen him as a reserve at Hull. I've seen him walking through the crowds at Euro 2016 when no one recognised him. That's crazy thing. The lad at Euro 2016 went to Senetti in the drabbest 0-0 with Slovakia I've ever seen. But I spotted him because, as I said, the other half's a Hull fan. So I was like, oh, it's Harry Maguire. That's good. He's come as a fan. Now he's the world's most expensive defender.
That as a title's bananas. I mean, I think he's probably not worth that moniker, but I think he's probably worth that money when you add in the English factor, which always seems to boost about 20% on top.
Yep, and I guess that's the same with Aaron Wan-Bissaka as well. I think both of them, and also the fee is driven by the buyer. Manchester United are one of the richest clubs in the world. They're one of the most desperate clubs in the world when it comes to when they need to buy people in that position. If they didn't get Harry Maguire, I'm sure the price for Koulibaly would be 30% more than it would be for someone else. So it's just how it works. And sometimes I think the people that make the decisions get justly criticised. And sometimes when it comes to price tags, it's hard. It's hard striking the best deal but not losing the player.
It's mad how it comes to this. There was talk in. Might have been while I was in Perth, actually, of Leicester wanted 90 million for Harry Maguire. United didn't want to go that far. We obviously had a limit. 80 might have been that limit, where we ended up eventually dealing with them. It's crazy to think that Leicester just go, we feel like he's worth that much to us. And then United either decide yes or no, because obviously there's no set prices for anybody, apart from the tribunal stuff for kids. But I think the way transfer fees come about is just, it really is a...
But now there's markers, isn't there? So my boy's got 75 million for Virgil van Dijk. So the next person who's that calibre or could be that calibre, I go, all right, we want £5 million more than that, because the market
said it for Nathan Ake, haven't they?
Yeah, and look at Kyle Walker. The Kyle Walker fee, what was that, 50 million, 48 million? So Aaron Wan-Bissaka is the next one, next cab off the rank. All right, we want a little bit more or about the same. So that's just what happens. And that's the problem as well with the transfer market. You do have these markers that the clubs want to hit. And if you are a Southampton, if you are a Leicester, you've got to get the best deal you can, because it isn't a Man United with a noodle sponsor and whatever. There's not the same money and income and revenues.
Yeah, I think Leicester's another team as well. I look at their midfield and I go...
Yeah. They'll look at your goalkeeper and go, wow. And they'll look at your attack and go, wow. So Man United have a lot of strong components. I just don't think... They're probably two or three players short of being Premier League... title challenges.
I think when you look at the depth that City have got, we're a long way from having that level of depth and that level of talent, although I'm not even sure we've ever had that level of depth or talent or anyone.
You've got depth.
All right, yeah, we've got depth. Yeah, all right. But I think that, for me, I think we've got probably 9 of an 11 that I would be like, yeah, pretty happy with that. I think there's probably still improvements. I think Luke Shaw probably needs to add bits to his game or needs to rediscover the form he found pre-contract.
It's funny, yeah. It was funny how we talk about the club's player of the year like that.
Two-time player of the year.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Only once.
Well, you get player of the year and players' player of the year.
Oh, okay, fine. I'll give you that. I thought you meant he'd won it in two seasons. I was wondering where I was for that other season. Jose certainly wasn't there. I think he needs to add a bit to his game. I think you're right. And I think he just needs to have the confidence of a manager again. It must have been hard, or it was hard, playing for a manager that clearly doesn't like you.
I think he tolerated a few players. I think Marcus Rashford was one of the tolerated.
But he didn't tolerate Luke for a long period.
No, there were some of the things he said about him. It was his body with my brain and that. That's just basically saying he's solid, isn't it?
Well, and there was also the issue of when Jose was trying to belittle someone, I'd be speaking to you like I am now, and I'd ask you a question, you'd be able to hear me fine. And then I'd ask about a player. Who? Every time. How's Luke Shaw? Who? And you're like, right, okay. And he'd call Gareth Southgate Gary Southgate after he annoyed him with an international selection and stuff like that. Just these small little things that he'd do just to let people know where they really stand. And I thought the way he handled Luke Shaw at times was pretty disgusting. But he got that chance, he took it. I think he said as much himself that being named player in this season and a season like that doesn't really sit very well, and he'll be as hungry as ever to prove people wrong, because there'll always be critics.
Yeah, last year was weird, wasn't it, trying to pick a player of the year. In reality, it probably should have been Paul Pogba. We've all considered the goals, the assists that he scored, whether they were penalties, he scored them and he assisted them.
It wasn't strange,
even in the running.
It was strange that the two best players were defenders in your worst defensive season in goodness knows how long. So says a lot, but it also could, I guess, if you look at it another way, is it shows you that he did have good components to build on, and they are the two players that in Lindelof and Shaw that will be part of this back four, you'd think. But
I think we've levelled up the defence. I think that's without shadow of a doubt. I think we're overall weaker losing Lukaku and not bringing in any form of replacement. We've not a target man style of player, losing Herrera, not bringing in any form of replacement. When we're not
playing anyone in January as well,
So we're already short, and I think you've got the likes of Jimmy Garner. I think it's a brilliant prospect. I think people are sleeping on the ability that Dylan Levitt's got. I think physically he's not quite there yet, and I just go, I don't see where, unless they're going to try and bring through Alou Traore, and he's just not good enough yet. I don't see where that reinforcement's going to come through.
I think you're probably right about midfield. It is light. It's a player light, a good quality player light. In attack, you're an option light in terms of Lukaku's a different kind of player. Don't think he's going to be missed by the manager. I know he's spoken, he's given political answers about Lukaku so far. My understanding is he's not going to be particularly sad to see him go.
Ollie is very much like that. And I think after the window closed, I said something like, he's going to say he's happy. But that's him being the opposite of what Jose was last year, where he was just like, the kids are shit and I ain't got all the players I want. Because it didn't do like, and publicly courting a centre half did nothing for the confidence of Bailly and Jones and Smalling. And I think Ollie's just trying to be different. I think Ollie tries to motivate and lift and elevate all the players in a different way to what Jose tried.
Well, I try and be nice to people just because you never know how life's going to pan out, and it's better to be nice to people than not. And I think Ollie takes a similar approach, whereas Jose just two-footed anyone got in his way, which is fine. It's a different approach, but it also means when things go bad, there's a lot more people laughing in your face. So if you've got thick enough skin, fair enough. But yeah, look, I think it was best. It was best for all parties that Romelu Lukaku left. He gets the move that he wanted. And Man United have recouped a lot of that money. Mm. And yes, they didn't reinvest it this summer, but they also don't have a player that was picking up mysterious knocks before matches on tour and clearly didn't want to be there.
Do you think he was picking up mysterious knocks, or do you think that was Ollie being political?
On the record, he picked up knocks, didn't he? Started very well for Inter Milan.
I'm not buying that. I think I'll just leave it as I'm not buying that. I think it was very convenient. Right, give us a prediction then. Where are United finishing this year?
I have said to people, but I am an eternal optimist when it doesn't come to Southampton. I don't think third is beyond the realms of possibility.
I've been saying third.
I've said third, but if you looked at Man United season last year between December, what was it, 26th and the end of March, that's a completely logical way of looking at it.
Well, I think you'd probably underestimate us if you said third after just that snapshot.
But the way it ended, it was really... I actually thought the Chelsea game was really telling. You rode your luck. You did. Like, I mean, if that Tammy Abraham goes in, we could be here sitting with a very different discussion with a lot of different hashtags going around. So I think third is possible. And also United have that experience in Europa League that they can cope.
God, I was trying with...
Do you not want to go to Lithuania in the middle of December?
Don't. No one's asked this that I'm aware of yet, but I would like to know what Ollie's attitude... I'm not good enough with words to phrase this correctly, but I want to know what Ollie's attitude to the Europa League is going to be. Is it going to be, do you know what? This is where Angel and Axel and Jimmy Garner are going to find their feet, and we're going to manage the squad in those games. Is that fair to say? Because Arsenal first geared it all the way through to the last stages. Can we do that, but also give game time to these very talented youngsters we've got?
I asked Ollie that question in Perth.
I didn't see the answer to that.
No, it's fine. I'm not sure even we published it because we had Paul Pogba, Alexis Sanchez, everything else, and the Europa League wasn't really on anyone's radar then. He said he wants to win it, clearly. But the fact that the manager's talking about winning it rather than moaning about being in it as a first answer tells you a lot. Mm. I think he does see that as a platform to get these young players coming through. And I asked the same question to Neil Wood, the under-23 manager, after the Rotherham game, about the EFL Cup and the Europa League being a kind of middle ground, because Man United for too long haven't had that ability to... They were signing the best 16-year-olds they could get and ready-made players, but there was a big gap in between and there wasn't the development opportunities for young talents. And I think some people have suffered because of that. But I think the Europa League could actually be one of the best things that's happened to United at this stage, at a transitional stage, that these young talents can go and experience hostile environments, different ways of playing, different pitches, the travel, what it takes to be a Man United player, the experience of going to a far-flung part of the world and everyone knowing who you are. I mean, that is... It takes players back. I was speaking to the family of one player and they were just completely blown away that there's people with their boy's name on the back of their shirt in the middle of nowhere. And it is just remarkable.
Yeah, I also very like the attitude that United seem to have taken with the EFL Cup, because that game last week was fantastic. That's how it continues. And I think the likes of Ethan Laird and Brandon Williams could find themselves getting first team minutes on the back of good performances in there.
I still think there's some room for some loan outgoings, and I know there's a few that are set to go out, but the ones that stay, they've got a chance. They've got a chance. You've got a manager who's proven that.
Yep. All right, Simon, thank you very much for joining us. Like I said, go give him a follow and find out some of his work on there. And hopefully we'll see you again at some point later in the season. Hopefully.
See what the feedback's
with
like.
Some success. Thank you guys for joining us. Make sure to subscribe. And I'll see you in the next one. Laters.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.